Good evening. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and everything in between. Professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, recording from home on Thursday, July 21st, 2022. On tonight's show, we take a visit to OFF-JFL and ZooFest. My guest tonight, comedian Mike Carrazza, on making space for experimentation with his show at OFF-JFL, ZooFest.
I'm happy that comics that I book on the show are eager to take those risks and eager to be like, I thought of something so silly and I'm not going to tell you. I can't wait to surprise you with it. And they do it and either it hits or it falls flat. And either way, we end up having a good time with that.
Walter Jaylen co-hosts a show called Rad Dads Forever on his fatherly comedy pivot.
It's made my comedy accessible and relatable in a way that, like, to more people, to way more people than it was previously, you know, when I was up there, you know, making like more pop cultural references or doing this kind of stuff or doing other kind of stuff. But now that, you know, there's a lot of it. And, you know, even if you're not a parent, you know, you could kind of relate to a guy talking about his kid, right?
With a special cameo by Jacob, aged 4 and a half.
Why did this chicken cross the road?
And a conversation from earlier this month with Amanda Kellogg, artistic director at Repercussion Theater, presenting a new show called All Shall Be Well.
It's so fascinating to go back through Shakespeare's plays, thinking about them through the lens of someone living through a pandemic. And the reality is his entire life was spent in the shadow of the plague. There's something comforting about that. Like, oh, right, this has happened before. There's also something really disquieting about that. Like, oh, no.
This comedian's bio opens with the line, Mike Carrazza is a fun, silly boy who loves you. This Montreal stand-up comic's infectiously upbeat routine has led him and his beautiful dimples to work with top talent like Tig Notaro, Deanne Smith, and Kyle Kinane. Here is some of Mike's comedy from a Just for Laughs recording from a few years back.
How's everybody doing? I'm a bit of a different energy. Y'all need to calibrate to me. Okay, all right. Do you guys think that if a chef is dating another chef, when they kiss, they both go, mwah, and then they motion together? Okay, first joke. We did it. Good. Good. Here's another one. Y'all ready for stupid? It's coming. Okay. I'm a big fan of common expressions. I'm sure you are, too. Of course we are. We're not monsters. It's great. Of course. I have a favorite. I'm going to start it. You can say it with me if you want to. If you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. That's right. But if you teach a man to fish, congratulations, you're a dad. Hey, way to go, dad. All right. Knock, knock. It's your dad. I'm coming for dinner. What's for dinner? Hope it's fish. I taught you that. You know what they say. If you give a dad, he'll dad for a day. But if you teach a dad to dad, you're both dads. I thought we'd say that one together. We did.
Comedian Mike Carrazza from a set he did for Just for Laughs a few years ago. You can find the whole thing, the whole routine, at Just for Laughs' YouTube page. It's called Don't Meet Your Heroes. And it goes off into some weird areas, including a spider that lives in his home. Spoiler, that is his hero. Mike moved back to Montreal from Toronto during the pandemic. He's bringing his show Figure It Out to OFF-JFL ZooFest this weekend. It's billed as part stand-up, part improv. Mike asks performers to bring up new and untested material, whether it's jokes or a story or something else entirely. Mike creates a trusting space where it's cool to fail or flail, but in the end, we hope you succeed. Mike remains on stage throughout the show, and when I spoke with him earlier this week, he explained why he's very selective about who joins the lineup, and also the big names he's excited to welcome at this edition of the festival. Mike performs tonight at 8:30 and tomorrow, Friday the 22nd, at 8:30 at Café Cléopâtre. Here is my chat with comic Mike Carrozza.
Welcome, Mike. Thanks so much for being here.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Sarah.
So you're back in Montreal. Was that a recent return from Toronto for you?
No, I've been back for a couple of years now, like about a year and a half, close to 2 years because of the, the air. And I'm back in town, have been. I just couldn't justify spending nearly a grand to be in a box in Toronto that I share with two other people that I couldn't leave to do shows at the time. So I moved back at, the tail end of 2020. And I've been here ever since. So, happy to be part of the festival again. Last year we got like a very pared down version of the fest.
Yeah.
But it was quite nice to just hang out with, like, the pressure was off. It was a bunch of Canadian comics hanging out with each other. It was a nice party time. It was a good time. And this year's bound to be just as exciting and very fun.
It's funny, the like festival adjusted experiences that we've had, I don't think necessarily were all bad for some of the events, like the Jazz Fest in Oceaga happened in the fall. And I actually really enjoyed these like smaller events.
Oh my God. If Oceaga happened in the fall regularly, I would be more likely to get like a Saturday pass to go see some bands I actually like.
The weather's much better.
Yeah. I don't need high noon to scorch me alive. Like, let me come see, because most of all, I'm going to end up seeing a band that I like, and that band is probably one that's going to be playing at 1 o'clock. Give me, they're not gonna, the biggest draw. Give them the 1 o'clock slot, and I'll be there for it. But man, if it were in the fall, I'd probably check it out every year.
What we do want to check out right now is Off JFL, and you're a very busy man. Tell me about this. I want to use the word cabaret, but the showcase that you've got planned for this week.
So my show Figure It Out with Mike Rosa is a show that I've been doing here in Montreal and in Toronto for a number of years. Started back when the Comedy Works was still around, RIP Comedy Works, burned to a crisp. And it's a show where I sit on stage the whole time and I invite guests to come on. And the original idea of the show was to have guests bring material that was brand new, stuff that we could figure out on stage together. It was one of those like workshop shows where it peeked behind the curtain kind of things. So we'd have a little fun with like, hey, Lawrence Korber, come on, do the show. And he'd be like, I have this story about a layover I just had on a flight to something that I think we could work something out on. And we did, but the show's kind of grown to be a little bit more like I'm up for whatever. So if a comic comes onto the show and they want to do that, I'm game. If a comic wants to come up on stage and just like talk about their day, I'm game. Amanda McQueen is going to be on the 22nd of July show. So I have shows July 21st, 22nd. Amanda McQueen has threatened to change clothes with me.
Okay.
For her set.
A clothing swap.
Right. Lucy Gervais done the show where they brought a painting and didn't let me see it, but had me guess what it was based on what the audience reaction to it was. So it really is whatever you want. Like Inez Anaya, who's also going to be on the 21st, has done the show before where she just came out and was like pulled up a chair and just started talking, just shit, like just had a conversation. It ended up being funny because we're both comedians, but the idea is that it's far from where it's started, but that's still there, and we keep it going with like extra silliness. And it's part improv, part stand-up, and I found a way to make it more about me. So that's the fun of it.
And I would imagine, too, like for you as a comedian, like it exercises your brain in a different way, that you're not asking people for 3 minutes, or like 5 minutes. You're getting people to stretch a little bit and to do something different. That must keep it really interesting for you.
Yeah, the sets are usually I usually like to hover around 8 to 10 minutes for the sets, because it lets us get the initial jitters of like, hey, this is a different way of performing comedy that I'm not used to. Or maybe they settle into the idea that they brought to the table. And if that idea doesn't pan out, we have enough time to kind of course correct and do something on the way out. Or, we get time to really explore some ideas that don't normally get to explore. So like that was like the workshop element to it. But I've had comics come on and do 5 minutes, and they were prepping for a festival, and they're like, can you come do the show? Can I come do the show? I need to prep for something. I said, come on out. I'll be on stage, but I won't say anything. I'll just laugh. So I'm like a built-in audience member for them if they got to run a set or something. But it is different. It is different. Like, I'll say that when I started the show, I didn't think it would get to this format. I didn't know. I didn't like have any idea of what it could have been. It could become. But I'm happy where it's at. I'm happy that comics that I book on the show are eager to take those risks and eager to be like, I thought of something so silly and I'm not going to tell you. I can't wait to surprise you with it. And they do it, and either it hits or it falls flat, and either way we end up having a good time with that. What's different about this edition is that I do have to do a little bit shorter sets, so like 7 minutes, 6 minute sets. And I have comics on the fest from The Nasty Show and Just for the Culture, and you know, some solo shows in town at the same time. For instance, I literally just confirmed Lisa Traeger on the 22nd. Atsuko Okatsuka is on the 22nd. Ooh. I'm working out the details for Paul Robloskis, and hoping to hear back from Sophie Buttle and Yamanika Sanders. Like, we're trying to get some other comics on who are on the fest, you know, from out of town onto the show, as well as a healthy mix of like local comics like Amanda McQueen and Nezanaya, as I just mentioned, Wasim El Munzer, Elspeth Wright, Chris Vendito, and a whole list of other comics that are also on. So it's a local showcase, but also like, hey, look, I got some pull here. I got some fun guests.
It sounds like a real grab bag, and it's really exciting. That is the voice of Mike Carrozza, who is performing at JFL. We're off JFL. You've got an outdoor show next week, but we're most importantly looking forward to this lineup on the 21st and 22nd. I wanted to ask about, by the way, I'm really excited about Atsuko, because she is the comedian who coined the drop meme on TikTok, I think, where she's walking with her grandma. She's always got her grandma with her in her videos. Right. And out of nowhere, music plays and they drop really dramatically, just bend their knees and drop. And it's since been copied a bajillion times. She taught Chandler how to do it on Jimmy Kimmel. So that's really cool that you'll have her on.
Yeah, well, her hour that she's running is also, from what I've heard, very funny and also quite emotionally, like the story's called The Intruder. It's about
a personal story.
Because there's some mental illness that runs in her family that you know, she ends up having to take care of her family. And, you know, she's very charismatic and very funny. So, of course, she's going to find a way to make that topic funny and engaging. But from what I heard, it's like it's quite the ride. So I'm really excited to catch her show in the festival. And I doubt that that's what she's going to be bringing to figure it out. I have a feeling that we're probably going to end up learning how to twerk, if I had to guess. But yeah, Atsuko is one of the guests that we have on, and I'm thrilled. I'm very excited. Last time I saw her was in Boise, Idaho, where we did this festival, and we both opened for Kyle Kinane, and it was just like a great theater show, and I haven't seen her since. And this was, God, must have been 2016.
Not the High Plains Comedy Festival.
No, this was 208 Fest in Boise, Idaho. Yeah.
I'm really excited, because what is she going to pull out of her hat?
I have no idea. And that's what's fun, is like, I don't know what anybody's going to be doing, but yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, like when something fails, that's okay. Like, this is a space for people to try.
Oh, yeah, things. Absolutely.
Is it important for you to know that a comedian can get out of something? Because you mentioned kind of rescuing, salvaging it, and you end the time and you move on to the next thing. And for the audience, it's like, okay, I don't have to worry about someone bombing because it's going to happen quickly. But for you, booking is important to know that the comedian can recover.
Absolutely. It's not just that, but the comedian themselves will have to like dig themselves out of, or rather more likely wouldn't get to the point where we have to dig ourselves out of something. But I think what's most important, because a lot of people message me about doing spots when this happens in the regular time, not just the festival. And they're like, hey, I'd love to do your show sometime. And it's very difficult to have to be like, we are not that close. It's a show where I kind of have to know who you are. I have to be confident in knowing that you know enough about me and my my kind of style and what I appreciate, what I like, you know. So it's tough to say no to some people, but at the same time, it's like I've had to. This is the one show that I booked where I've had to say no to the most people, and it's a bummer, you know. But it does make for the show that I am proud of right now. So
do you basically say, "Buy me dinner first, and then we can talk"? I have to get to know you.
I mean, I don't get to do that because I don't want to be that guy. But I'm like, I do think that there's something to, like, I've always been a comedy fan first and foremost. I love comedy so much. I there's a reason I volunteered at JFL for so long and then started comedy and kept doing it. And like, I got to see so much comedy. And even when I started comedy, a lot of comics were like, "What are you doing going to the open mics? You don't need that stuff anymore. Just do a regular book show and work your material out there." And the answer is like, I like seeing comedy. I like seeing where it's at. I love seeing where the young comics are at and what's going on, what's new, who's got that something, that like just new thing that you can kind of see. And an act that's on the festival that she's in another show as well, the Gen Z show, but she's doing Figure It Out with us, I believe, on the 22nd. Messine is a newer comic on the fest, on the scene, who I just got to know by being on a couple shows with her and being like, you know what, we have fun at the back of the room after shows, you know, we have a good time. We're riffing with each other. It's really fun. It's very easy. Let's give you a shot. And so I had a spot for her on Wanna Figure It Out in April, I believe. And she did great. And so I was like, come on back for the next one. Let's do the festival. So it works out in that way. Like it's not always comics that like, I start out being like, I love and respect your work. It's people that like, hey, I met you. I don't know what your comedy is like. We get along great. One of these days, I want to see you do comedy and then be like, all right, now that's in the vault. I know for sure I'm going to think of you for the next one.
Mike Caressa, comedian based in Montreal, performing at Off JFL this week. If it's okay to circle back, you just mentioned like, even when people were like, hey, you've gotten to a point where you don't need to be at an open mic, or, you know, you're going to see smaller shows. I don't think as a culture we talk about, whether it's stand-up or sports or theater, like for myself, I love seeing theater. I don't think we talk enough about how beneficial it is to see things at an amateur or a beginner's level, especially when it comes to performances, because you can really learn a lot, not just about yourself as a performer, as an athlete, whatever, or as a critic, let's say, but getting to see something that is still kind of in a nascent state where someone's cutting the teeth lets you know what's good, what works, you know, who's got raw talent but needs polishing. Like, it finesses your own critical skills. So I'm imagining that for you as a comedian who loves comedy, you're seeing someone who's new, but you're like, I would have done this way. This person's amazing, but this situation happened. How did they handle it? And that probably improved your game, right?
Well, the thing is, like, you know, you start comedy doing open mics and then start getting booked on stuff. And Montreal's kind of got a faster pipeline to book shows. There's a lot more book shows than there are open mics. And back in the day when I started, there were a couple open mics, and I still like going to them after, you know, after I'd already been booked on the on Just for Laughs, and after I'd like begun touring and traveling to another country for comedy. Like, I still like coming home to do the open mics in my city, or even if I were around a scene long enough to do an open mic out there, I would, just because it's a new room in the sense that there's no entrenched audience at an open mic. There's no open mic that has a following, in my experience, or at least in the scenes that I've been able to perform in those open mics. It's just the comics that are there. So number one, you've got an audience of people who are already going to be critical, who already clearly love what the art form that you're trying to contribute to. And then also, you know, it's there's an element of safety to knowing that you can bomb in a room that won't matter. And then at the same time, with that comes like a fearlessness to try and experiment with some new ideas. Like, I won't lie, there's a great feeling that comes with being like the older comic who's got experience and some credits and stuff, going up to a room full of younger comics who are like, oh my God, we got to check him out. It's like, yeah, that's flattering and stuff. But I'm like, you know what? If you're going to check this out, I am working on stuff. So like, yeah, I'm here just like you guys. And I like hanging out. It's not like I'm unreachable, and I'm also just so low on the totem pole. You know what I mean? Like it's not like I'm out here being like, hey, I'm Kevin Hart going to an open mic, and you know, guess what? You guys are gonna watch this new bit that is a 30-minute story that I'm working on. You know, I'm just like I don't know. I get work in comedy, and I still like to try to polish it up and do some weird stuff. And not all places are going to be okay with you testing weirder stuff at their venues. So I love going to the open mics. People will be like, you don't need them. I'm like, yeah, I do. I like them.
Well, let's check in when you reach your Kevin Hart level of fame and like, see if you're still doing all that. But it also just circles back to why you love the format of the show that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you like seeing that experimentation. It sounds like you're going to have so much fun this week. Thank you so much. Can you plug the dates again? You're going to do the 21st, 22nd, and then we can catch you outside the following week.
Yes. So July 21st, 22nd at 8:30 at Cafe Cleopatra. I am hosting my show, Figure It Out, with Mike Carrozza. Tickets are available online, $25. I'm also going to be a guest on Battle of Wits on July 21st, right before my show at 7 p.m. So come on out to both of those if you can. And on the 28th, I'll be doing an outdoor show at the Zoo Fest stage. I got, I'm doing 15, 20 minute set outdoors. Coco Beliveau is hosting, and I'm waiting to confirm other stuff, but we'll see what other dates I've got in the pipeline. So keep an eye on my Twitter and Instagram at Mike Carrozza.
Mike, thank you so much for coming on. It's been so nice to catch up with you.
Thanks, Sarah. It's good to see you.
That was comedian Mike Carrozza. He'll be on stage as a slew of comics attempt new material and try out some unexpected things for his show, Figure It Out. Two shows, tonight at 8:30 and Friday at 8:30. Both are at Café Cléopâtre. You can get your tickets at zoofest.com. Mike will also perform at a free outdoor show on Thursday, July 28th, a week from tonight. Follow Mike on Twitter at Mike Carrozza, on Facebook, or at his website, MikeCarrozza.com. And his last name is spelled C-A-R-R-O-Z-Z-A. I'm Sarah DeAy. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Still to come, Shakespeare in the Park kicked off its summer tour earlier this month, actually just last week, with a new show inspired by the Bard's own brush with lockdown. My conversation with Repercussion Theatre's Amanda Kallock. I opened my copy of the Montreal Gazette yesterday to find an adorable photo of two dads taking their kids to the playground swing set, Walter J. Ling and Lawrence Korber, photographed by the Gazette's Alan McInnes for a piece by Bill Brownstein. Now, Walter, who has piles of thick, dirty blonde hair stretching all the way down to his elbows, he's pushing his tyke Jacob on a swing, and Jacob, at age 4.5, is already modestly following in his comedian dad's footsteps. While Lawrence's 7-week-old baby Wesley is understandably not as far along in his career, though his timing is impeccable, having arrived precisely on his due date the very same night his dad was booked to perform. Obviously, Lawrence canceled on that gig. Both comics will bring their family shtick to Rad Dads Forever, a returning local show to the off-JFL ZooFest lineup. The first performances back in 2018 and 19 sold out. And after a pandemic break, wild times to be a parent, the show is now back. Walter is co-hosting with Reese Turner, whose daughter May is the same age as Jacob, Derek Sege headlines, among other fatherly comics on the bill. I spoke with Walter J. Ling yesterday about how becoming a father changes you and your comedy. Stay tuned for a cameo appearance by his son, Jacob. Hey, Walter. Thanks for being on Upstage. How are you doing today?
I'm better now, Sarah. It's been a while since we've done this.
I know. It has been a while. How have you been?
Yeah. And it's like, and we're doing this virtually online or whatever. And so like, it doesn't even make a difference if I like try to sneak in a bottle of hooch this time.
Right, because in the past, you have skirted the rules by coming into the CKUT studio.
I brought drinks for everyone.
Yes, well, which was very nice of you. You know, similar like going to kindergarten and making sure you have birthday cupcakes for everyone in the class. Are you drinking something right now, though, Walter?
Oh, I keep forgetting you can see me. Yes, I'm having a White Claw right now, a classic classic White Claw, tangerine flavor. I do like, you know, I've gotten on in the years, I've sort of transitioned away from beers and gone into the old White Claws here. This sounds like an actual paid advertisement. Hi, my name's Walter Lang, and I don't always drink White Claws, but when I do, I drink 20 or 30 at a time.
They're kind of deceptive, right? Because the alcohol content isn't that high, and they're fruity, and they're light, and they're clear as well.
They're very light, and I think, I don't know, you got to be getting some kind of hydration from this, a little bit, right?
Do you drink more now that you are a dad to a young child than you did before your son came along?
At one point during the pandemic there, I kind of stopped drinking completely because I thought that I was coming down with a case of gout. And I said, and I'm like, that's mildly concerning. So I'm like, maybe if I cut out the hooch. So then like, I kind of cut it out for like completely. And then I was like, maybe I could just do like seltzers and shit. But anyway, so.
Well, Walter, ask about the drinking and the parenting, because you are making jokes about being a dad. You're going to be performing at the Rad Dad comedy show this Friday and Sunday, Rad Dads Forever. And this is a comedy series that you started a couple of years back.
Started back in like 2018, because our kids were born in late December. Me and Reese Turner started this in 2018. Our kids were born in late December 2017, like a week apart from each other. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, we're dad comics now. This is what we're doing. This is how we're going to get booked more. We're dad comics now. We're going to do a show called Rad Dads. It's going to be the best. And we got into Zoo Fest the following summer. Like the kids weren't even a year old yet. And and we did Zoo Fest. We did Rad Dads for the first time at Zoo Fest. And then we toured it in the Maritimes after that first summer. Again, the kids not even being one year old yet each. And then we did it again the following summer. And then the world shut down for 2 years. And now we're doing it again.
And tell me about the kids. So you have Jacob, your son. So the kids are 4 and a half now. And that's with your wife, Catherine. And
my wife, Catherine. And it's really easy to remember. My wife, Catherine, and Reese's wife, Kate.
I attended Kate's wedding. We sat at the same table. Reese and Kate's wedding, I was there. We sat at the same table, but you and Catherine weren't married yet. And they have a little girl named...
Were we not?
Yeah, we were at the same table.
But me and Catherine weren't married yet at that point?
Not that I remember.
We were married for a while.
Okay, let's... And their daughter's name is May. So tell me about the switch from saying like, okay, we're going to be dad comics now. Like, you know, the comedy that you had before, like how would you classify the change? Does that like just automatically now all your jokes are parenting jokes? Like, is it a more relatable?
I'm mostly fucking around here. Like I didn't really change the nature of my comedy.
Yeah.
And like, and when I do dad jokes and stuff, or like do material about my kid or whatever, about being a dad.
I'm just going to stop for a quick second because you had an F word and I'm going to.
Oh, but are we not supposed to do that? Are we not doing that? No F word?
I just want to be safe because this airs at 6 o'clock and not still kind of daytime hours. So
yeah. Okay. Sorry. I forgot.
No, that's really fine.
I forgot that it's no F words on this because.
It is going to be on air. Yeah. It's going to be on FM. Yeah.
My bad.
No, it's okay. Why don't I just retake that part? So I'll just ask about
what were we talking about?
Well, I wanted to know about because you were explaining the dad joke thing is kind of like us pivoting to dad comedy is just kind of like a jokey way of putting it. But I was wondering
why did I even swear? Anyway, so sorry about that. All right.
No, it's okay. I was gonna let it pass and then bleep it, but I was like, well, why don't we just retake it? Because I don't want to bleep out other stuff and make it sound messy or anything.
Just cue up the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. So you joked earlier about going from like, now we're going to be dad comics. We both have kids. Was that actually what happened? Like, did your comedy really change or identity?
I kind of kept performing the same way that I had been. And now like, and now even when I do dad jokes or when I do jokes about my kids, like I just kind of call it like dad jokes, like with an edge. It's like sort of like edgy dad material, like that. It's not like it's, but for, and it's not like and it's not dad jokes, you know, like as is understood by the internet, you know,
which is although, like a lame joke, exactly. Or a knock knock joke or something like that.
Yeah, and I worry sometimes when people see that this is like, you know, oh, it's a dad comedy show that they're in for an hour of like dad jokes, right? You know, like, but you know, this Modern Family, this ain't. So I just kind of kept doing the same kind of comedy and stuff, but like now there's like my experience as a father,
yeah,
and I just kind of blended that stuff into the stuff that I had previously been doing, and now, honest to God, like it's just kind of like the, I don't know if it's like creatively the best period of like my stand-up comedy, but it's like it's, I feel it's made my comedy accessible and relatable in a way that like to more people, to way more people than it was previously, you know, when I was up there, you know, making like more pop cultural references or doing this kind of stuff or doing other kind of stuff. But now that, you know, there's a lot of it, and you know, even if you're not a parent, you know, you could kind of relate to a guy talking about his kid, right? Like, I mean, that's like more tangible than some kind of like weird like esoteric TED talk or something.
Yeah. Although I'd pay to watch you do an esoteric TED talk. That is,
I'd love to do an esoteric TED talk. Like,
that is comedian Walter Ling. He is going to be co-hosting Rad Dads Forever along with his pal Reese Turner, both parents, both dads to 4.5-year-olds, not together. You have partners. Your son is named Jacob, and we're talking about kind of the branding of being a dad comic. So is it important to have like something that's identifiable, to have that kind of identity, to be kind of packaged in a certain way as a comedian, whether you're like, I don't know, a kooky comedian who's always single, or you're a rad dad, or maybe.
Yeah. Cause so like the problem with being packaged or packaging yourself is that even if you don't kind of set out to have an identity, you're like, well, I'm not going to be put into a box. It's like other people will do that to you, right? The audience will do that. And like other comedians will do that, and they'll try to categorize you as something, whether or not you want that. So definitely, I think that's kind of, that's why I think that's working out for me now, this kind of edgy dad identity, because it, you know, for better or for worse, there was almost like a lack of an identity before, I think. And, you know, I don't know how much like I bring to the comedy table is just being like pop culture nerdy white guy or whatever, but like the sort of edgy dad stuff is something. It's like it's a tangible identity that people can relate to, whether or not they're dads themselves.
Does your son understand what you do for a living, that you're a comedian and you get up and you tell jokes?
He definitely knows that I go out and tell jokes, because that's what we tell him, like, you know, when I'm going out in the evening and stuff, and he's still awake, and he's like, gotta go do a show now, buddy. He knows I go do shows. He knows I talk into a microphone. He knows I tell jokes, and to the point where like he likes telling jokes. So he likes to tell jokes and stuff, but they're like, you know, 4.5-year-old jokes. And some of them are based on like real world classic jokes. Like he does chicken cross the road stuff.
Right.
You know, but then he'll add on like a weird little tag at the end. And hold on a second. Jacob! Catherine! Send Jacob over real quick. This is going to be worth it. No, this is worth it.
Okay.
Jacob, come here, buddy. How you doing? You have some watermelon?
Yeah.
I'm talking to my friend Sarah on the computer here. You could hear her, but you can't see her. You want to say hi, Sarah?
Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Jacob.
I was just telling Sarah about how you like to tell jokes sometimes, because you know how Daddy does tell jokes on stage?
Yes.
Yes. Do you think you could tell Sarah one of your jokes, maybe the chicken one?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Can you hear him okay?
Yes, I can.
Tell Sarah your joke.
Why did the chicken cross the road?
I don't know. Why?
Get to the other side from the cheetah.
From the cheetah.
Oh, that's a good one, Jacob. Now I've got the image of a cheetah with like drooling, staring at a chicken.
Yeah, it's funny, eh? You want to do one more, Jacob?
Yeah.
Okay, one more.
One more.
Okay, which one do you want to do? You know, what do you want when you mix animals? One of your mixing animal jokes, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, tell one of those. Yeah.
What happens if you mix a chicken and a cow together?
Do you get that, Sarah? What happens if you mix a chicken and a cow together?
I don't know what.
A chicken cow.
You get that chicken cow.
Hey, right, thanks, Jacob.
Thanks so much, buddy. Chicken cow. Yeah.
He's got a lot of promise.
Yeah, and he loves telling those jokes and stuff. And it's just something he kind of like cling to doing, and not, but just like he just kind of connected with it, and it's just fun. Like, and I certainly don't want to, like, you know, like, you gotta be a big star kid, you know, like, smile with your eyes, Jacob, you know, show, you know, like, I don't want to be weird stage parent or anything, but it's like, you know, you like telling jokes and stuff, why not?
Yeah, of course. If he straight up wanted to be a comedian, you know, a couple of years from now when he's old enough to go to open mics, which is, you know, 14 years from now, hard to look that far into the future, but would you be okay with him going into comedy?
As long as he's not a hack.
Okay. There's just one rule. Like,
and, you know, I think at the very least, I'd be able to sort of hopefully help to guide him through by example, you know, through by tales of my own misadventures. Assuming, you know, like, stand-up comedy is even still a thing, like, 15 years from now, which it might not be.
Ooh, I suddenly have the urge to take this clip and put it into an audio time capsule of sorts, you know? Because I don't know. It will probably still be around.
I wouldn't be surprised. 15, 16 years from now, if there's no actual sort of, like, entertainment medium of stand-up comedy, I'd be like, nah, you know, it was about time.
Why do you say that?
I don't know. I joke about this that I'm not even like a super big stand-up fan. I don't really like the genre. I think the whole thing's kind of hack. But it's just like, I don't know. It feels very dated in a certain way. And even when people try to do like the new stuff, just like just the sort of very, the bare bones of the medium is very kind of archaic and old-timey. And one wonders, you know, like how sustainable this entertainment industry is. It's very niche in its own way, you know.
But don't you think people still kind of want to get together and see people make jokes? Like, isn't that a kind of timeless thing?
Again, give it a few years. Let's see what happens, you know.
Okay, all right. You're bearish on stand-up comedy, but you're a stand-up comic yourself.
But I'm a stand-up comic myself. Yeah. Yeah, maybe my attitude will be different after this summer. If I get a few more gigs, maybe I'll be more optimistic.
Speaking of booking gigs, someone who will be on the show is Lawrence Korber, who's also a regular or on the scene. So and I think he was due to perform at a show recently. I might have been there, and he wasn't able to make the show. Why is that?
Oh, no, I didn't know about that. When was this?
Well, no, more recently, he had a very good reason to back out last minute from a comedy.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Yes. So, yes, he, because of the birth of his child, which is the day he became a rad dad, you know, with his lovely wife, Evelyn. And and that was so Lawrence is the newest rad dad in the crew. And he's going to be joining us for our two shows, and couldn't be happy about that.
And there's a really nice photo of you on the MontrealGazette.com website, and he's holding up his precious bundle of love, Wesley, who was born,
Wesley, I guess,
just under 2 months ago. And you and Jacob there at the playground. Jacob looks so cute, and he's there with his little baby.
Wesley is like a little baby. It's crazy. Like,
yeah.
But he's already I've always seen that kid like practically double in size.
Yeah, it's amazing how fast they grow. So he had a comedy show on, I think, the baby's due date, and sure enough, so, you know, first time babies sometimes are a little bit later than that due date, right? So I'm sure it seemed like a good idea at the time, and then he ended up not being able to make the show because his wife did deliver. So he's a relatively new member to the Dread Dad Club. Thanks so much, Walter. Great to chat with you.
Thank you, Sarah.
That was Walter J. Ling, comedian and dad. And you heard from his delightful son, Jacob, just 4.5 years old and already spinning jokes. Jacob will unfortunately not be part of Walter's upcoming show, Rad Dads Forever, because it is, after all, happening in a venue located above a strip club, the one and only Café Cléopâtre en Saint-Laurent below St. Catherine. Shows are this Friday, July 22nd at 7 o'clock and Sunday, July 24th at 7 o'clock. Walter co-hosts with fellow dad and pal Reese Turner with guest comics Lawrence Korber and Morgan O'Shea, headliner Derek Sege, and a guest dad who will be joining the lineup as well. You can use RADDAD15 to get 15% off your ticket. Get it at zoofest.com.
The Festival International de Nuit d'Afrique is back with its free outdoor programming from July 9th to the 24th in Montreal. Meet at the Patière in the Quartier des Spectacles and on the new L'Esplanade Tranquille. For the first time, a second scene for twice as many concerts and free activities for the whole family. On the program, concerts, open-air workshops, DJ sets, restaurants with tropical flavors, and don't forget the Timbuktu Market. Discover the festival like you've never seen it before. Programming on festivalnuitdafrique.com.
I'm Sarah DeA, and you're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca, coming to you from my home yet again this week. Nothing says summer like Shakespeare in the Park. I want to revisit a conversation from earlier this month with Repercussion Theater's Amanda Kellogg, artistic director. They have a brand new show that she's written with input from cast members. It's called All Shall Be Well. It launched just last week and it tours until August the 6th. There's a show tonight in TMR, DDO on Friday night, and Westmount Park on Saturday and Sunday evening. All Shall Be Well plunders the Bard's canon for plague-related content. After all, Shakespeare wrote King Lear during a lockdown. Amanda has looked into his plays, songs, and sonnets to compose this story. A cast of five performers, Samantha Bitanti, Tiernan Cornford, Anton May, Andrew Joseph Richardson, and Thomas Valliard perform under the direction of Rebecca Gibeon. Here is my conversation with Amanda Kellogg, the writer and artistic director from earlier this month. Welcome back to Upstage, Amanda. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm doing so well, and I'm so glad that Repercussion is back.
I know, it's so exciting. Yeah, it's really exciting.
How does it feel to be producing this year?
Oh, man. I mean, how does it feel to be alive this year? It's so strange. The world is just such a wild place right now. But it's really exciting to be, creating this particular show, which is very much of this moment. And it's really exciting to be out in the park and playing and you know, watching actors discover things. And it's just a joy to be making theater and to be, you know, thinking about seeing audiences soon. It's a lot of good stuff and a lot of challenges as well, dealing with COVID cases in the team, dealing with higher prices, dealing with everything taking longer. Lots of hills to climb, but also lots of joy on the horizon too.
You just mentioned rising prices and shortages of things. And I don't think we talk about that enough, that, you know, everything is more expensive nowadays. And it's also hard to get your hands on things. And that, of course, naturally affects the theater business.
Oh, big time. And all of my colleagues that I talk to as well, they're sort of, you know, going, wow, the pandemic was nothing. This is the hard part, actually, is trying to come out of this thing. It's really wild. And I mean, our gas budget, for our vehicles just sort of keeps climbing. It's an eye-opening experience for sure.
And we don't want to dwell too long on it, but you bringing up the gas bill, I guess that is a particular challenge for Repercussion. Being in Shakespeare in the Park, transportation is a key element.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting because, you know, I've spoken with a couple of other touring outdoor theater companies across the country. And one of the things we've kind of realized, and it's something we're trying to quantify this summer, is, you know, the fact that we tour means that our audience sometimes doesn't have to. It means that they don't have to travel as far. They can sort of stay a little bit more local rather than, you know, taking the car into the city to go see theater, depending on where they live. And so one of the things we're trying to do this summer is find out through a survey how people are getting to the park, and if us, you know, traveling there means that they can do less commuting.
Right, because you're in people's neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So that makes it easier.
Yeah, hopefully. That's what we're going to try to find out.
Wow, it's such a puzzle to unpack. One thing that I kept coming to way back in March 2020 was thinking about sickness and health. And, you know, that we'd been through this before, but maybe not as recently in like our living memory to have this kind of shutdown of the world. But Bill Shakespeare came up because he wrote some plays while there were periods of sickness where he was what we would call under lockdown, right? That kind of threads into what you're doing with All Shall Be Well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I became like so obsessed with thinking about Shakespeare and the plague when this pandemic first started. And that is the direct impetus and context for this particular show. And it's so fascinating to kind of go back through Shakespeare's plays, thinking about them, you know, through the lens of someone living through a pandemic. And the reality is his entire life was spent in the shadow of the plague. And it's, there's something comforting about that, about knowing like, oh, right, this has happened before. There's also something really disquieting about that. Like, oh no, it means it will probably keep happening. But there's certainly something humanizing about it. And it's been really fascinating working with all the other, you know, creatives on the show and just sort of talking through all of it and finding those resonances and yeah, just kind of both learning more about and understanding Shakespeare's plays in a different way. And then also having that, you know, allow us to reflect on our own time in a different way as well.
That is the voice of Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director at Repercussion Theatre, getting ready to launch Shakespeare in the Park 2022 next week, July 14th. So tell me about how you started going about assembling this reworking. I mean, is reworking a good word for that or reinvention of certain texts? Like, how do you see what you're trying to do?
Well, what we did was sort of early on, you know, I kind of gathered together a group of scholars and theater artists from across the country, and we would meet on Zoom every couple of weeks, and we reread the entire complete works of William Shakespeare with the mindset of looking for the plague in the plays and then just talking about the plays. And sort of parallel to that, I started meeting with some of the artists who are now involved in this play, people like A.J. Richardson and Sam Batanti and Brian Dout. At the time, Dakota Wellman was part of that group. And we were doing research and then just talking about what we were finding. And eventually, based on that, based on a couple of workshops with some other people who became involved, I then sat down and started writing. And I wrote the beginning of the play, brought it to the team. Rebecca, our director, came on board. We assembled the rest of the cast, the designers, and then we had more workshops. And from there, the play just continued to kind of take shape. And it was about me kind of taking what was happening in the room and then putting pen to paper. And so what you get is a kind of a premise that it's being created by five actors. And of course, those actors have a ton of input into what's happening. But there is a kind of, you know, a writer behind it all. And that's me.
I'm just like trying to understand how you have all these different hands involved and how complicated that must be. And of course, having a guiding hand behind this, putting it together is a big help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it helps that, you know, everyone involved has just been very, you know, Rebecca is a big believer in yes, and that's kind of been a motto throughout, that it's about, yeah, okay, great, love that. Let's figure out how that works in. And so there's been a really beautiful spirit of collaboration and complicity. And I think given this moment, I mean, one of the things that comes up a lot in the play is the idea of pivoting. And I almost have like a visceral response just saying that word, but that's, we've all had to just pivot so much over the past 2 years that, you know, if theater artists can't make that into an art form, then I don't know who is expected to do it.
So well put. The Rebecca that you were referring to is Rebecca Gibeon, who is, I guess, kind of in a directorial capacity working on All Shall Be Well. Was that a good
Yeah, yeah. She's directing the show. So I've you know, written it, and I'm artistic director of the company, but she's directing the show. And we also have we've collaborated before. And so she's just an incredibly collaborative and really generous and graceful leader. And so it's a great energy to have in the project.
And she worked with you prior, a couple of years before the pandemic, Measure for Measure.
Yeah, that's right. She was assistant director on that show. And she's just become a co-artistic director of Persephone Productions with Layla. So they're running Persephone now, which is great.
That is Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director of Repercussion Theatre, getting set to present All Shall Be Well, July 14th, touring for four weeks after that. The schedule is very intense. How do you, because you're like in a different place every single night for 4 weeks. How do you keep up?
Yeah, it's a lot of planning. It's a lot of preparation. It is intense. It's you know, it's a huge beast. But thankfully there are people on the team, our technical director, Adam, some of our actors, all of them except for Thomas and AJ have done the tour proper before. You know, it's really helpful to have people who kind of know what it is to be able to say to everyone else, it's okay. It looks intense, but we're all going to be okay. But yeah, they're long days. You know, the crew is there to set up at about, you know, noon or one. And by the time the actors arrive for mic check and fight call, and then the audience starts arriving, it's a big day for everybody. And but it's also really kind of magical. It's a beautiful way to get to know the city, actually, to discover parks that you might not get to know otherwise. And it's a really kind of amazing way to feel like, okay, I had a summer. You know how sometimes you get to the end of the summer and you think, man, I missed summer. You never feel that way when you work on a repercussion show. Think, nope, I remember every sunburn, every raindrop, every thunderstorm. I was there for all of it.
You feel it acutely because you've truly lived it.
Yes, absolutely.
I wanted to ask again about the script and just turn back to the story, because as we mentioned earlier, you're taking snippets not only from Shakespeare's plays, but also his sonnets and his songs. Sometimes we don't hear about those parts of his oeuvre as much. And the last time we spoke, we were actually talking about sonnets that your team had filmed in different locations around the island and put online. So you were moving away from the plays already and talking more about the romantic writing. So what should we look for in terms of sampling from Shakespeare's oeuvre?
Well, part of what was so fun about doing the show this way was, for me, it meant that I could dig into some of the works, like you're saying, that we don't normally do. You know, it's, of course, we do talk about Romeo and Juliet because Romeo and Juliet has one of the most overt moments of the plague being a plot point in all of the plays. But then there's also, you know, his minor epic poem, Venus and Adonis, which is in a way the first thing he writes when the plague shuts down the theaters in about 1592-93. And so There's something really fun about getting to tackle this stuff that we don't normally do in at Shakespeare in the Park, including plays like King John and Richard II. I mean, there are some gems. There is some beautiful poetry and some beautiful text in some of the lesser produced plays. You know, one of the least produced plays is Pericles, Prince of Tyre, and there's two scenes from Pericles. I'm giving a lot away, but you know, I'm hoping people will forget by the time they come to see the show. But yeah, there's excerpts from plays that we would never normally do in Shakespeare in the Park summer, so that's really fun to get to dig into some of that really beautiful work.
It's kind of like a sampling, and it'll help you broaden a little bit of your reading, I think, of Shakespeare by getting away from the bigger plays we kind of know really well, right? To focus on the other gems.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, I've said to a couple of people that I feel like, I hope that this is the kind of play that if you already love Shakespeare, there will be really great stuff in there for you that you'll go, oh my God, this is just expanding my, you know, love of the Bard. And if you are not really that excited about Shakespeare, I hope there will still be really fun stuff in there for you that you'll be able to follow the story without necessarily, you know, being in love with Shakespeare either.
And very briefly, if you have trouble with accessibility in terms of kind of being able to follow along and understand, you guys are again using an app that will allow you to follow along with the script kind of in real time. It's called Plank.
Yeah, so it's this digital company Plank that we've worked with now since 2016. It's awesome. They've created this web app where, yes, you can either follow along with the text in real time, in French or in English. But you can also, some people, what they do is they read it ahead of time, and that way they come and they can just sort of you know, be present with the play. And sometimes people sort of catch up at intermission and go, what the heck was that about? You know, so there's different ways that people can use it. But yeah, it's a really cool tool that we're excited to be offering people again this year.
The play's the thing. I'm really excited to see this, and I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with us about All Shall Be Well. Thanks so much, Amanda.
Thanks so much, Sarah.
That was Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director of Repercussion Theatre. She has written the upcoming show with input from members of the company. The show is titled All Shall Be Well. It is a collage of different parts of the Bard's canon, including plays, songs, and sonnets. First show happened last week in Dorval, and they're now touring until Saturday, August the 6th, with the final performance happening at Jean Mons Park in the Plateau. Upcoming performances including this evening at Park Deniluc in TMR, Town of Mount Royal, Friday night in DDO at the Dollar Des Amours Library, and Saturday and Sunday evenings in Westmount at Park Westmount, which in my opinion is one of the most magical of all the locations. Attendance is free, donations are encouraged, and don't forget your blanket, chair, or cushion. There's also snacks for sale, but you can bring something to nosh on yourself. To plan your show and find out more information, visit repercussiontheater.com. You have been listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at CKUT.ca. Tonight you heard my guests, comedians Mike Carrozza, he's at Just for Laughs and off JFL this weekend, and Walter J. Ling, who is co-hosting the show Rad Dads Forever, headliner Derek Segang, July 22nd and 24th. In a conversation from earlier this month with Amanda Kellogg, Artistic Director at Repercussion Theatre, presenting All Shall Be Well. A very big thank you to my guests. You can hear past episodes of Upstage at ckut.ca under the archives. Thank you to Jack Solar, our spoken word coordinator, for making sure this show gets to air. And thank you for tuning in. I'm your host, Sarah DeAy. Speak with you next time on Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and ckut.ca. Have fun and stay safe. Up next is Grey Matters. Oh,
This summer, I'm going to avoid spreading COVID-19. It's easy. I'll wear a mask in crowded places. If I have symptoms, I'll self-isolate and do a rapid test. If I test positive, I'll stay home for at least 5 days. And for the next 5 days, I won't visit anyone who's at risk. I'll avoid social events like festivals and gatherings. And I'll limit my activities to only the most essential, all while wearing a mask and staying 2 meters away from others. The virus is still out there, so we have to be careful. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome to the July 21st edition of Grey Matters. Tonight on the show, we have a lecture entitled Interconnectedness. It's a lecture delivered in Cambridge, Massachusetts on March of 2020. The speaker is Vandana Shiva. Vandana Shiva is an internationally renowned voice for sustainable development and social justice. She's a physicist, scholar, and social activist. She's a founder of Navdanya and director of the Research Foundation for Science, Technology, and Natural Resource Policy in New Delhi. She is the recipient of the Sydney Peace Prize and the Right Livelihood Award, the Alternative Nobel Prize. She is author of many books, including Water Wars, Earth Democracy, Soil Not Oil, and Oneness versus the 1%. So, here's tonight's lecture on alternative radio, Interconnectedness by Vandana Shiva.
I feel that if we don't activate our sense of interconnectedness with all life, if we don't start sowing the seeds of what I have called Earth Democracy, we are going to see 99% people as disposable. So this is the time to make oneness and interconnectedness as one humanity on one planet the political project of our times.
That's Vandana Shiva, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamyan. This edition of AR features